and welcome to episode 93 of This Woman Can. I am your host, Janice Sutherland, founder and CEO of the This Woman Can Network. My guest this week is Dr. Rochelle Haynes. She is a published author, global speaker, management consultant, senior lecturer. She holds a PhD in international human resource management and is the founder and CEO of Crowd Potential Consulting, Inc. Rochelle's passion lies in applying good people management practices within the growing digital economy, and she has travelled across Southeast Asia to explore the world's top remote working hotspots, explore co-working spaces, and interview globally dispersed workers. She specialises in gig HR, a term she coined to describe the discipline of using HRM to help companies enhance their working relationships with contract or gig workers, digital nomads, and other off-site stakeholders whose physical contact with organisations is limited or non-existent. We discuss how she favours collaboration over competition and trusting your intuition when deciding who to collaborate with, getting out of your head and not allowing perfection to hold you back from your goals, how the key to great confidence is to keep trying and using your failures as a learning tool to progress, plus the overcoming the ever-present imposter syndrome. So I really do hope you enjoyed this week's interview. Let me know what you think, and if anything we discussed resonated with you, don't hesitate to contact us or leave a review wherever you listen to this podcast.
So my guest this week is Dr. Rochelle Haynes. Hi, Rochelle. Thank you so much for joining me on This Woman Can. Hello. Now, tell people where you are, and let's see if they can guess where you're actually from.
I currently live in Cheltenham, in England, and in the UK.
Okay.
Is that enough for a sample of the accent?
I know. Okay, we'll go on a little bit. So tell us a little bit about why you're in the UK, your career, your journey so far, and where you are today.
Okay, so I came to the UK as a master's student. Originally, I wanted to study human resource management, and that wasn't offered at the university in my country as yet. So I moved to the UK to do a master's, and because I thought in the UK, master's is 1 year, so then I can go back home in a year, as opposed to 2 years, which is everywhere else. And 11 years later, I'm still in the UK. So from the master's, I got a scholarship to do a PhD, and following that PhD was in international human resource management. And following that, during that period, I did consulting with local city councils here on employer branding and so forth and other HR areas. And then from there, I also got into academia. So I'm a senior lecturer as well over here. So right now I do a mixture of academia and practical work. So my consultancy is called Crowd Potential Consulting. So,
okay. Yeah. And you focus on the human resource piece. You focus on quite a fairly niche area is your interest. So tell us a little about the area you cover in human resource.
Yeah. So my area is very much, it started out as performance management, and then it slowly got whittled down to a very niche area. So I went from performance management to performance management in the digital economy to looking at specifically gig workers.
Okay.
And now my focus tends to be more along the line of digital nomads. So looking at how do you manage the performance of persons working remotely or independently within a company team.
Okay. So two phrases used there for our listeners who may not be familiar with. So gig workers, yeah. What would be, how do you describe a gig worker?
So a gig worker, think about an Uber driver or someone that works on Fiverr or Upwork offering consulting work. So these are persons that work through online platforms to deliver their products or services. So think about your Uber driver or the person at Deliveroo or persons working or offering their services through Upwork or Fiverr.
Right.
So those are typically what we mean by gig workers.
Okay. And the second phrase was digital nomad.
Yeah. So digital nomad is a term really for a person who works remotely, but that is location independent. So they're not tied to one particular spot to work from. Typically, when you think of a digital nomad, you think of a person working from a hammock on a laptop in Thailand. But a digital nomad could be someone that works from country to country or from even cafe to cafe.
Right.
And yeah, during COVID, we've seen a massive rise in people working like this.
Yeah, definitely, definitely, definitely. Yeah. So what have been your key motivators to drive you into that line of work, that line of research?
I think it's a lot to do with my own personality. So I came to the UK as a person, an immigrant, an expat, whichever term you want to go with. And I was always interested in people who work overseas. So when I finished my master's, the first thing I was interested in for my PhD study were expatriate managers,
right.
How companies manage expatriate managers. So slowly it began to whittle down. That kind of coupled with my love for traveling. I love to travel. Any good excuse to travel, I'm there. So then I think that kind of started to combine my interests. How in terms of the area that I teach, I then became really interested in how do you work effectively while traveling? Because that's something that I continually sought out to do.
Okay.
So, yeah. Personal interest and yeah, academic interest as well.
Fabulous. So it's good to find, I suppose, a career that kind of is of interest, because some of us fall into careers that are jobs as opposed to a career and a passion.
Yeah. I find it's very easy to keep going on this topic for me because it's an area that I'm very passionate about. And I recently started a podcast, as you know, along the topic of remote work and remotely speaking up. So when it is something that you love, it becomes easier to connect to it. You don't get bored and you get excited about it. Sometimes I wake up thinking about, okay, what am I going to do next in this area? So yeah.
Fabulous. So Rochelle, so throughout your career, you've had very varied, you've traveled countries. You're a bit of a digital nomad yourself. So describe one of your biggest challenges and how do you overcome challenges and the lessons learned?
Oh, one of my biggest challenges. Oh, which one? Oh, goodness. I think probably when I moved here.
Okay.
Because one, it was a very unfamiliar territory for me.
Yes.
But then on top of that, it was a different culture that I had to get familiar with. And at the same time, I was very introverted.
Yeah.
So having to be in a classroom, having to be among clients and articulating what I do and feeling like you're not in your own home comfortable environment, and on top of that you're not always very comfortable in front presenting in front of people, it was kind of navigating the lack of familiarity as well as that introverted nature.
Yes.
So I mean, it's ironic when I talk about the things that I do now, but my response to those things, because you're probably thinking an introverted person, she has a podcast, she does this. but my response to when I get that uncomfortable, and that's really to push and to challenge myself. So for example, I had this experience when I was doing my master's where the course leader, she was asking us a lot of questions and no one was answering. I was answering the questions in my head, but I was too shy to put my hand up.
Right.
So I was like, this is ridiculous. So everywhere she answered a question, when she's in the other classes, I just decided, you know what? I'm volunteering for everything. I am putting my hand up for everything, right or wrong. I'm going to shove myself out of my comfort zone. And slowly I still get very nervous, but at least I know that I can actually push past it and do it. And what I have to say matters as well.
Fabulous.
That's been it for me.
And I think as women, we have to remember that we don't just get over whatever it is we have in introversion.
Yeah.
That is a word, isn't it?
Being
self-conscious and stuff like that. It's not that we miraculously overnight get over it. It's just that we learn that we recognize the signs and we learn the tools with which to come back.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So I would say you're fairly accomplished. You're very accomplished. But how has failure made a positive difference in your life, Rochelle?
Oh, my word. Oh, let me count the ways. my saying when it comes to failure is, I don't fail, I learn.
Yeah.
I'm very much a person that believes in the butterfly effect. So I believe that everything happens for a reason. So whether or not I understand what the reason is at the time, I kind of give into it and say, okay, I'm going to see where this goes. So I've had moments where, for example, when I first applied here, I didn't get into my first university of choice because of a technicality. And I was dreaming about this university for a very long time. And then the letter came back and it said it didn't get in for this reason. And I tried to call and straighten it out. And they were like, sorry, our places are full now.
Right.
But I had applied elsewhere. I got into my second choice. And it turns out that the degree that I was going to do at my first choice, it wasn't certified. It didn't have the chartered status attached to it.
Right.
Whereas my second choice, it did. And also, I found out that it was better known for the area that I wanted to pursue. So it turned out to be a blessing in disguise because I got both the professional qualification and the master's at the same time. And also, I made some really good contacts there. That's how I got into academia, the scholarship, and things just continue snowballing. So I'm very much of that perspective that I don't fail. I learn. So I'm always, if someone says no, that's the worst they can tell you, you know, if you offer your services.
Exactly.
The worst someone can say is no.
Yeah.
And maybe I'll ask, maybe the timing is off. You never know why. But if they continually say no, on to the next one.
And you're very right, because I always say to them, you know, just ask. I said, because if they say no, you're in no worse position than when you actually started.
And you started. Yeah, exactly. So that's been me. And sometimes it requires kind of building a broad back for that, you know?
Right.
Not being too soft or sensitive and not taking business as personal, because it's when someone says no, there's so many other things that are going on outside of what you're offering and whatnot. Maybe something is wrong with the product or service that you're offering, but sometimes it's a matter of resources at the time. It's a matter of timing of the company. It's a matter of the person you speak to within the company.
Yeah.
So it's just to not to take it personally.
Yeah. And like you said, take that learning from it. I mean, because even if it is a no, if you have the opportunity to ask more questions as to why it could be a no, or what, you know, what led to that decision, then you can walk away with that learning and look to correct it for future.
Yeah. And I always think of like the lean, I guess you're familiar with like the lean startup model, where they say, don't try to perfect a product. Don't try to perfect what you're doing. Start with the most basic version and then build on it. So that's what I've learned to do as well. Just rather than procrastinating because I want my thing to be perfect.
Yeah.
I know. I just start.
And
then use the feedback to continue developing along the way.
And the lean business model shouldn't just apply to business, should apply to women too. So, you know, just don't wait for perfection.
Yeah,
just get on with it and see what happens.
And you know, exactly. And you know that women suffer with imposter syndrome a lot more than men.
Yes.
So I think it's really important for us to take certain things on the chin. If not, we would never start.
Yeah.
Like so many times I go to do something that I myself, are you ready? In my mind, I'm like, no, but we're doing it anyway. And that's been constantly me when I pursue things. If I had to wait till I was ready for every opportunity, I would never do anything.
So share with us an instant where you've kind of really had, you talked about imposter syndrome, where it really kind of stopped you in your tracks. Give us an example of that.
I can't say that ever stopped me.
Okay.
Which is good. Maybe it slowed me down a few times. So for example, when I started consulting, a lot of time I would go to meetings and the first comment I would get from people, how old are you? That's the constant question I get. So it's often I felt quite intimidated, especially when I go to the room and I look around the room and everyone seems 20 years older than me. Yeah. So what I used to get actually was that sometimes people were very hesitant to do business with me, or I'd been a group of people, and let's say the everyone is talking around me, and they're just talking around me and not quite acknowledging that I'm there because I look almost like a student in some people's eyes. But only then when they see me present, or when I offer my services after I get an opportunity to speak, then after the conversations start coming in. So I think, It's for me, imposter syndrome has really been that when I go to events and I feel like what am I doing here? I don't belong. Yeah. So many people here, they probably have so much more experience than I do, you know? So I think that's shaken me a lot, and it's probably slowed me down in terms of starting the consultancy. But I started and I've caught up along the way.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So if you had to start from scratch, Rochelle, knowing what you know now, what would you do differently?
Yeah. What would I do differently? I would be more, it's a mixture of things. On one hand, I said I'd be more fearless. On the other hand, I think I'd be more cautious.
Okay.
So it's a funny balance. What I mean is, in terms of making decisions, probably a lot of things I would have done fast. I would have started the podcast a year ago. I would have registered my company much earlier. Mm-hmm. I would have jumped into business and offering my services a lot earlier. But really and truly, it doesn't matter now. And in the end, the timing worked out to be perfect.
Yes.
Because of the nature of what's going on and how these services now needed more. So in the end, it was fine. In terms of the caution, I'm a very trusting person. And in business, I've always had this mentality of collaboration over competition.
Yes.
And I still very much live by that. I love to collaborate with people. But one or two times I have had the experience where I've someone and I'm very open, very, oh, let's share ideas, let's do things. Yes, you're in, this is what I have. And someone says, oh, this is brilliant. Yeah, this is really good. And then they don't follow up. And then I see my idea produced somewhere else. So I think that has also made me very cautious, because at the end of the day, not everyone wears the same lens that I do. Yeah. Or operates in the same way that I do. So I think I've learned also to be, I don't know what's the right word, but to be very cautious, or to be sometimes a better judge of who to collaborate with. Selective, that's the word, yes. Yeah.
So you talked about collaboration over competition, which is great. But one of the things we often hear about women in the workplace and stuff like that, and we have things like the Queen Bee syndrome, where there's only room for one woman at the top and stuff like that. Total fallacy. But have you, when it comes to you to collaborate, do you find it easier? And I'm not trying to leave you down here. Who do you find it easy to collaborate with?
You know what? I think there's so much to be said for your gut feeling.
Yes.
And so many times I have ignored my gut feeling. The few times I have ignored my gut feeling, it was disastrous. To the point now that I know when I feel that little weariness in my stomach that I can't quite explain or justify, but it signals to me that something here isn't quite right. Yeah. I pay attention to that. Yeah. So sometimes it's a matter of gut feeling. Sometimes it's a matter of experience and what that person can bring to the table and how that complements what I do. Many times with regards to the person, it's whether we connect well.
Right.
And to me, that connection really matters for the quality of the relationship, the information sharing, future collaboration. So it's a mixture of those three things, kind of what the person actually does and how that fits. And also just the connection and the nature or the spirit or the energy. The energy is probably the better word that I get from that person as well.
Very diplomatic answer.
Yeah. What would you have said, Jan?
Oh, no, I'm the one doing the questioning here. but like you.
That's a question for all of them.
Like you, it's very much about a gut instinct, and I've learned to trust my spidey senses over the years, and listen intuitively to what I'm feeling. And sometimes, as the people say, my spirit don't tick, you know, or stuff like that. So sometimes it's very much about, I'm a little bit wary. I'm like, oh, but then I'm also very open. Like, I will say to somebody, I know very, very quickly if I'm going to connect with you, very, very quickly. Yeah. Maybe it's just more experience and stuff like that. And I will tell people, I like you. We can work together. And I'm very upfront about that straight away. You know, that this is how we can work together, because I like the vibe that I'm feeling.
Exactly. It does matter to the business relationship.
Very much. Very, very much. And I found it very much more, I suppose, more paramount being a remote worker. I've had to trust that instinct a lot more, because I don't have, especially over internet and stuff like that, with conversations, because I don't have the in-person opportunity to connect.
When you know, you know.
Yes, definitely. So, Rochelle, what advice would you share with women embarking on their own career journey, maybe leadership, entrepreneurship? What advice would you share with them?
Just do it. Just do it. That's the main thing I would say. Whatever in your mind is telling you that you can't. Of course, when you embark on something new, you make sure you've done your research. You make sure you have something to offer that will be wanted, and you're solving a problem. But there's a lot of time I spent just researching, and wanting to have everything done and have everything perfect before I actually started. I think the main thing I would say is to get out of your head and just do it. Just start with, even if it's the most basic thing, you know, make sure you have something and go and get some feedback on that for your work and learn as you go along the way. But don't let the need for perfection hold you back, because you will never get to a point where you feel that you are fully ready. And if you wait until you're ready, you will never do anything.
And the thing is with perfection, it's subjective. Because what you think, what one person thinks is perfect, is totally different from somebody
else. Absolutely.
And I keep telling you, perfection doesn't exist.
It doesn't. It really doesn't. And the other thing I would say as well is to be patient with yourself. Gosh. There were times that I was like so hard on myself. I was like literally like 3 months after registering my company, I was like, well, why am I not making any money yet? I didn't even have my products fully formed yet. And I was like, where's the money? Where's the money? So I think sometimes you need to be patient, and you need to learn and enjoy that process along the way. Enjoy
Very
that
much.
Growing process.
Very
don't
much.
Be too much in a hurry. And don't let your end goal be money. Make your end goal be to solve a problem, to do service and to help somebody.
Yeah. And just to add to that, first of all, patience was a thing I had to really definitely had to relearn. Absolutely, totally agree with you on that. And I think the other thing I'd add, especially if you're going out on your own business, is don't be afraid to change your plan. I call it swerving. Don't be afraid to swerve, you know, because if you feel something's not panning out, it's not like, you know, the first time it doesn't work, you drop out totally. But if something feels like you should be going in a particular direction, at least investigate it. You know, your plan doesn't have to be rigid. It doesn't have to be, you know, what they say, set your goals in stone. Set your plans in stone. I can't remember it is. And your goals in sand or something. So it's smooth. I can't remember what it is, but anyway, you know what I mean. So you've got to be fluid, and especially in today's climate. One of the things I'm telling leaders is that you definitely have to be just strategically fluid, because whatever plan you had last week may not be applicable this week.
And I mean, like, if this pandemic and this situation hasn't proven that, then I don't know how else we can learn that.
Absolutely. So, Rochelle, what do you think, we're talking about goals here and stuff like that, what do you think holds women back from going for the goals?
I think it goes back to that imposter syndrome. I think it's, and in a way, it has a lot to do with societal norms and how we've been brought up. We've been brought up in this very patriarchal society where traditionally our roles have been to care for the families, to care for household. We enter the workforce a lot later. We've been fighting in terms of certain barriers and discrimination. Then you also have issues with trying to take care of your family while also working. So I think women question themselves a lot more than men, because I think men have always been groomed to be successful, to be ambitious, to be strong, to go for their goals. Whereas women have always been groomed or raised to be compassionate, to be understanding, to be forgiving. And those aren't bad qualities, but sometimes in business, it can really slow you down, because we pause ourselves when we want to, like when we're in a meeting and we think a particular idea is not that great, we might not speak up when we should. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes we do speak up, but our voices aren't as heard as other people within the room. Yeah. So I think it's really fighting sometimes against societal norms that have bred that sort of doubt in our minds that what we have to say sometimes isn't as valid as the other other people in the room. So that's really changing now, as women have shown their value and their quality. But I think a lot of us, we still have that ingrained imposter syndrome when we go into a workplace or a room and you're surrounded by all men. You feel out of place. You feel like, oh, what am I doing here? You feel like, can I actually do this? So I think really, for me personally, that's been something that I've noticed in myself as I consult as well.
So how do you get past that? I've worked in male-dominated industries, so I totally understand where you're coming from. But how do you get past that?
I think it's the confidence that you build over time, especially when you actually try and you do something and you see that what you have done can work.
Yeah.
Or that you you're worried about what you have to say isn't valid, but then you speak and people's response to what you say is very, let's say, is very appreciative or so forth. So I think the more and more you realize that when you start and you realize that you can actually do it and what you say makes a difference, then the confidence starts to build. For me, that's how I felt it was, because the first time I went on stage to speak about what I did, I was super nervous and I felt like what was I doing here? No one's really going to listen to me. And that kind of affects how you do things.
Yes.
So when I find that when I'm nervous or when I am beating down on myself or that imposter syndrome kicks in, I tend to approach a public speaking engagement like, okay, let me just hurry up and get off the stage. So then what I'm saying sounds like, good evening, everyone. Let's just, blah, 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 blah. I'm just rattling through and rushing. But whereas I stop and I pause and I take confidence in the fact that I know what I'm doing and I step on that stage and present, people feel that passion. People take more confidence in what I'm saying because it comes over with a stronger and more convincing tone or body language, whatever the thing might be. So it's really to get out of your head. I think sometimes we stand in our way a lot.
Absolutely.
So get out of our own way. And let, once you know your stuff, make sure you've done your research, make sure you've done what you need to do, but don't spend your time only doing that. Just try.
Yeah.
And also just build that confidence.
Yeah. And it's quite funny, we're talking about perfectionism stuff. And one of the things I have to remind myself is sometimes because of results of perfectionism, we have women have gone to the nth degree to make sure we've got it right. So when we walk in that room, you look around people, quite often we're far more qualified on the people that are in that room. So we need to take some confidence from that, the fact that we actually do know our ish. You know, we've come in here and you can't test me, you know, I've worked really hard at this, and I know my thing.
Yeah.
Karen, sorry.
Oh, sorry. No, I was thinking, it just reminded me of the US as well. The US is a good example of that, where the highest percentage of educated women are Black American women.
Yes.
And it's really from the you have to say, are you? Doesn't matter, or whatever the case might be, the more you're going to make sure that you know as much as possible and are as ready as possible when you're going to do or deliver.
Yeah, definitely. So Rochelle, share with us a success quote or a mantra that you use and why it's meaningful to you.
So my life philosophy is don't wish for it, work for it. But in terms of what I've seen in business as well, I really like, I think it's Mandela's quote, courage is not the absence of fear.
Yes.
Not Mandela. And I forgot the other half of it. It's doing it. I think it's something along the line of it's doing it anyway or something like that. I've always been the type of person, like with regards to don't wish for it, work for it. I've always been the type of person that, some people have called me a dreamer before, but then when I do stuff, I've had so many people say to me, I can't believe you said in university that you were going to do that.
Yeah.
and you actually did it.
Yeah.
And so many times along the way, people like said to me, oh my gosh, you said you would do that project and you did it. Oh, you said you'd do a podcast and you did it. You said you'd have a, and you did it. So many times, like for me, where I started, it seemed quite impossible. And I was very much of the mindset of, this is bigger than me. I didn't come from a particular type of background. I didn't have like similar line of resources as everybody else. Mm. Why should I feel like I can stand on the same platforms as certain people? Yeah. But then, I don't know, I've always been very, I don't know, I've been a person to always plan and execute regardless of the opportunities. Yeah. So I'm the type that if a door isn't there for me to knock on, I'm going to build mm-hmm. that door. And that's what I've constantly experienced.
I like that. Years.
Yeah. So with don't wish for it, work for it. That's my mentality there. You know, like there's a dream that I see that I want. So what I'm going to do is put pen to paper and create a plan of how I can get that thing that I want, as opposed to see it as out of my reach.
Yeah. And I'm very much the same vein as you, you know, but when you come up against your detractors who think, oh my gosh, Rochelle, you're dreaming far too high, that's above you, et cetera, et cetera. How do you handle that? What's your response?
Two words, watch me. Nothing else. Stay tuned, watch this space. So I've heard that too often. I mean, well, I can't say there's much that I said I've dreamed about that I haven't executed, and I'm very proud to say that. One of the things I've been trying to do recently, because a lot of my friends often say, Rochelle, you're really hard on yourself, because I'm always looking to, oh, this isn't good enough, let me improve this. But I'm trying also now to learn to celebrate my wins.
Yes.
So where
absolutely.
Where I look back in the past, and I actually think of, like, so many times, if I'm going to do something big, I'm going to pull up a Word or an Excel document and create a plan for that thing. So I have these drafts and plans. Remember I pulled up one recently and I said, oh, I remember I wanted to do this thing. Oh gosh, I bet I'm going to go to that plan and see that I haven't even started yet. And I went to that plan and I pulled it up and I realized that I was on the path and doing everything that I said I would be doing without realizing it or acknowledging it was probably the best way of saying. Yeah. My plan had 10 things to achieve in a year and a half, and I was at number 8 in 8 months.
Right.
So I think where I get caught up in this, oh, I'm not where I actually forget to stop and acknowledge how far I've come.
Yeah.
And it's really important and really empowering to acknowledge where you've come. That gives you also the steam to keep going. So yeah.
We're often going so
to celebrate my win.
Absolutely. We're often going so quickly that we don't stop, you know.
Yeah.
And it's like you say, something I've learned to do is say, actually, look how far you've come. You know, just take some time just to stop and reflect, and don't do it just once a year. Don't do it at the end of the year because you spend all your time beating yourself up. Just take some time, maybe once a quarter, even just every week, just say, okay, what did I achieve this week? This is what I set out to do. You know, something I did, something I struggled with before. It could be small, but just take the time to acknowledge that you've progressed. And it's so important.
Yeah, it really is. It's really empowering as well, especially when that imposter syndrome kicks in.
Yes, yes, definitely. So, Rochelle, I'm trying to imagine you as a teenager. If you sound like a very diligent young woman, but what advice would you give to your teenage self?
Oh my word! Oh, what would I tell my teenage self? That you'll be fine. Probably that you'll be fine. As a teenager, I was really quiet and introverted. I was into my rock music, my beach and my surfing. But yeah, I was very, very, very shy. So I was very quiet in school. And I think sometimes I worried a lot about the future. I don't know why. It was a very, very nice school. I felt like everyone was more mature and more confident than me. So I kind of went into my own a bit. And I'm constantly worried about if I would be as great as everyone else, because everyone just seems to know what they're doing. So I think, I tell myself that, you know what, you're going to be fine. It's going to work out.
Excellent. And what are the three things you've learned about yourself during your career?
What are the three things that I've learned at myself? One, that I'm extremely resilient, and that's something that I'm celebrating more and more. I'm extremely resilient. I'm the type of person, if plan A blows up right in front of me, I'm already halfway through creating plan B.
Yeah.
And that's really served me well. And I've had a lot of feedback from, let's say, jobs that I'd applied for and interviews I went to when I actually got the job. We just couldn't believe that, because sometimes things would go wrong in the interview. I had one interview that was done remotely, and the location I was in, there were all kind of things going on. The laptop broke. There was an earthquake. Yeah. It was crazy. But I just said, okay, hang on, I'm going to do this. And then that felt, okay, hang on, I'm going to switch to this. And then when I actually got the job, they said, we just couldn't believe how seamlessly you just switch from thing to thing to thing when everything was going to be out. So I'd say resilience, I've really developed over the years. What else have I learned about myself? I learned that I work too hard. So I'm trying to have a better work-life balance. Everyone has been pointing this out to me. So I'm really, really learning the importance of working and playing. And yeah. I have had some really great experiences, but sometimes when I get really passionate about a thing, that consumes me. So it's really important to put that, let's say, your mental well-being, and to create some time to pause and reflect. What else have I learned about myself?
One more thing.
I think probably that I have more experience or knowledge to do the thing I want to do than I ever usually think I do. Because every single time I step on a stage, or I go to deliver a product or speak to a client, right before the meeting, I'm thinking, oh my goodness. I mean, I've done all the prep, but sometimes that imposter syndrome kicks in. Like, oh, suppose I don't know what they want specifically. Suppose I don't know enough on there. And then where the information comes from, because, you know, as you go along, you're picking it up along the way.
Yes,
you've done your work. So yeah, I guess it traces back to that confidence again.
Yeah
to just trust yourself.
Definitely.
So yeah.
Great. So we're coming down to our last couple of questions. You would please get you out of the hot seat.
Sure.
So if you could choose your own mentor, Rochelle, who would it be and why?
So I have chosen a mentor already. This is a business mentor. Do you mean a life mentor? Or
No. A mentor, whatever makes a difference to you.
So I have a mentor already in terms of a business mentor. And that is my business partner, actually. I'm very lucky. My business partner, Jeremy Blaine, he's also my mentor, because what he does and how he does it is similar to what he is a very far along the journey that I have recently started.
Right.
So because he has done the thing that I am aspiring to do. I'm always really interested to learn from him, especially his business sense. I really, really like his business sense. Coming from academia, one of the things I've learned, and I really love academia, I like the fact that I can engage in both business and the academic side.
Right.
But sometimes I learn that they can think very differently. They complement each other, but in terms of the approach, with Jeremy and our conversations, he often says he learns things about how I approach things academically. And I often say to him, I think we have such a good balance, because I really learn a lot from how you approach business.
Right.
So yeah, I would say him. I'm very fortunate to have him as a mentor.
Good. Great. So where would we find you on a Saturday morning at 10 a.m. typically?
Saturday morning at 10 a.m. I will be at my favorite bakery. I have this love affair with sourdough bread. It has to be freshly baked. And there are two bakeries in sourdough bread I've ever had. So I'm usually coming from the gym and cycling to that bakery, hoping that it's not all gone. It was funny. One time I felt really bad because this lady was walking to the bakery's entrance, and luckily I was on my bike, so I passed her out, jumped off the bike, got in the line, and got the last loaf of sourdough bread. It's that serious.
It is serious.
That's usually my question. Getting my proper fresh bread and sorting my team breakfast out.
And what does success feel like to you, Rochelle?
Success to me is knowing that I've accomplished what I set out to accomplish. So it's not necessarily a particular point in the journey. It's not necessarily a particular amount of income. But it's kind of showing myself that I can actually do what I set out to do. So I like to achieve plans and to hit not just goals and targets, but it's more like a, I don't know, it's a confidence and character thing for me. I like to turn something and to execute on that well. So I don't know, success, it differs. My opinion of success differs at, depending on when you speak to me. Other times I would define success. Yeah, sometimes I would define success as how much I enjoy the journey as well. So sometimes the end point, I've had situations where me and some people would have been working on a project. The project didn't pan out in the end, but I've made so many brilliant contacts and friends along the way. And then I go off to do other things with them, and that works out brilliantly. So to me, success can be either that achieving that end goal or accomplishing what I set out to accomplish, or actually the process, that engagement and the quality of that engagement.
Fabulous. Well, that was my last question. So if people would like to connect with you, Rochelle, how can they do that and learn more about what you do?
So my website, my company is called Crowd Potential Consulting. And our website is www.crowdpotential.co.uk. And I also have a podcast that's called Remotely Speaking Up. So you can find that Instagram page, Remotely Speaking Up, and you can follow us there. Or you can subscribe to our YouTube channel. But also my email address, if they wanted to contact us for our consulting services, is contact@crowdpotential.co.uk.
Excellent.
So yeah, be sure to check out Remotely Speaking Up.
we didn't close this off from the beginning. Let's tell the listeners or the viewers where you're from.
Oh, I wonder how many guesses they've been so far. So I'm from Barbados.
Excellent.
Or BIM, as we like to call it.
BIM, thanks. Yeah. So, Rochelle, thank you so much for your time today. It's great having you on This Woman Can.
Thank you. Oh, it was lovely to talk to you.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this interview with Dr. Rochelle, and I'm walking away with a few things ringing in my ears, mainly building my own confidence by keeping on trying. I think that's really, really relevant, because it's only through repetition that you get to master the skill. Having patience with yourself and not being so hard. Too many times we're our own worst critic. And then the last thing for me is don't wish for it, work for it. And that's probably my philosophy anyway in life. So let me know what stood out for you. And thanks so much for listening to This Woman Can. If you like what you heard, help me out. Subscribe to This Woman Can on iTunes. Give us 5 stars, share a review and your feedback. And also don't forget to join the This Woman Can community. You can register to be a member and learn all the great work the network is doing by heading over to www.thiswomancan.coach. And if you'd love to put a face to the interviews, don't forget you can watch us in conversation on the This Woman Can YouTube channel. So until next time, take care wherever you're listening to this podcast. And remember, if I can, you can, this woman can. Take care until next time.